forget frequently asked questions.
Common sense, common knowledge, or Google.
How about advice from a real genius? 95% of people in any profession are good enough to be qualified and licensed. 5%
go above and beyond.
They become very good at what they do, but only
0.1%.
are real geniuses. Richard Jacobs has made it his life's mission to find them for you. He hunts down and interviews geniuses in every field. Sleep science, cancer, stem cells, ketogenic diets, and more. Here come the geniuses. This is the Finding Genius Podcast
with Richard Jacobs.
Hello, this is Richard Jacobs with the Finding Genius Podcast, now part of the Finding Genius Foundation. My guest is Erin Diehl. She's the CEO of Improve It Corporation. She's the author of ICU, Top 1% Podcast Host. She has a new book out, How to Energize Your Team Through Radical Empathy. We got a lot to talk about, and I welcome you, Erin. Thanks for coming.
Thank you, Richard. I'm stoked to be here, and I'm here to serve your audience, so you let me know what you need.
Well, no problem. Tell me a bit about your background and then some of the projects you've been doing and why, and that's how we'll start.
Yeah. So let's just say this. From a young age, I knew I wanted to help people. I wanted to be a talk show host, specifically Oprah Winfrey, which led me down this path of trying to become Oprah in my teens and then early 20s. And I graduated with a broadcast journalism degree from Clemson University and thought, how in the world does Oprah become Oprah? And so I moved to Chicago, the city where Oprah lived, and I thought maybe through osmosis, I could get some of her good vibes and transform myself into this woman. And through that, found myself in the halls of improv comedy classes day and night. And for me, it was really just stepping into those classrooms where I really felt myself fully come alive. I'm a little bit wacky, a little bit woo, I like to say. So for me, it was really allowing myself to be my whole self when I walked in that room. And as I kept training over the year, I had various jobs, but I found myself in my late 20s in business development at a recruiting firm, which is, you know, talk about doors getting slammed in your face left and right. I was experiencing that.
What were you doing?
What was I doing at the recruiting firm? I was doing sales at the recruiting job. And it was so interesting because it's such a competitive space, especially in a city like Chicago. So many different firms and just a lot of, it was a lot of learning on the job. Okay. So what I found was all my improv training kept spilling into my day-to-day life as a professional. And I started to become a better listener. I started to think more quickly on my feet. I was more empathetic. I was more present in conversations than ever. And so that led me to where I am now. I am what I call the chief edutainment officer of the company I founded, Improve It. And we've been in business 10 years. We use improv comedy to train professionals and teams on power skills. Some people call them soft skills. We call them power skills to help them be their best selves professionally.
Maybe you should have a product called Improvit or Improvit.
Well, that's what I do. The E is teal. It looks like Improvit if you take away the E on our marketing. So it's like the E is teal. The rest of the other writing is like a black font. And so some people call us Improvit, but we do we use improv to improve it. And it's been a wild ride. Like, I have 22 improv professionals who help me facilitate our workshops globally. And they've been with me, all of them, but like three have been with me since either 2014 or 2016. It's comical, the things that happen and what we witness in a corporate setting, but we really have the best people. These people have to have improv experience as well as corporate experience in order to be a facilitator. And so through my own journey of building a team these past 10 years, through my own journey of being led 10 years before that, I wrote this book called I See You, A Leader's Guide to Energizing Your Team Through Radical Empathy. And it uses the components of improv comedy to help you be your best self professionally through major ways.
Okay. I was going to ask you, I probably preempted you, but go ahead. And then I'll ask you today.
Okay. Yeah. So, and there's three main ways that we do this. So the first part of the book is all about self-love. The second part is all about selfless leadership. So if you can give to yourself first, a lot of people think this is backwards. I get a lot from giving to others, but I have to have something to give. So if you can give to yourself first, you can become a selfless leader. And if you can do that, you can start to magnetize and attract the company, the job, the team, the organization, whatever it might be, into your life, because you've done the work on yourself internally. You have more to give externally. And it's through that magnetic pull, you start to find the people you surround yourself with. And that ultimately makes your career your career.
Well, if I walked into an improv class, what would they teach me? Those are beginning improv. What are these skills that you learn?
Yeah. So how we work is mostly B2B, and we partner with clients who are most of the time they're HR leaders, talent development leaders, and they have a very specific need. So what we do is we get really specific on what's the challenge that you're facing? What is the thing that keeps you up at night, literally? And from there, we have 10 different power skill offerings that we can most likely match your challenge with. So we have a pre-work, the live session. We have a laugh break before the live session. I can tell you about that. Then we have post-work. But the pre-work is a comedic video that our team has filmed that shows you how not to do the skills that we're going to come in and train you on. So we have 10 different videos, 10 different skills that we train you on. And then you do what we call a laugh break. And that's where we get your team on Zoom. We do short form improv over Zoom to show you what improv looks and feels like. So now that you've gotten your chops in on improv, you know what you're walking into. We come in either virtually or live. And let's say your team's specific challenges, you're having trouble communicating in a hybrid world. We would most likely recommend our effective communication workshop. It's a 2-hour session in person or an hour and a half session virtually. You are not able to look at your phone. It is so interactive. You're not able to use technology. You have to be present during that time with the people that you're in the workshop with. And then we have an e-learning course that is built in conjunction with every workshop offering we have too, that just reinforces what we teach you in those workshops, in the live sessions, because they are so impactful. We're using play to teach people. And when people get that aha, ha-ha moment is what we say. That is when the light bulb goes off and you're laughing at the same time. That's when the magic happens and people start connecting the dots.
What's an example of a skill that maybe would fall flat because of the way you teach it, it's accepted and used and people benefit?
Yeah. So, okay, here's a good one. So listening, right? Like listening is, and this is fresh. I just did a workshop with a healthcare facility last Friday. And that the reason I was in that room is because there was some internal gossip. There was people communicating on different channels. No one was getting the same information. So a lot of that was just making sure that when you are listening, you're listening in real time and that you have a streamlined process to do that. So one of my favorite activities that we do, and I could do this with you, Richard, if you're open to it. You want to do a little game with me?
Sure.
Okay. It's called last word response. Okay. So it's super easy. Can you tell me, let's just talk, have a conversation about what you did this past weekend, and then I'll show you how it works. So tell me in like a sentence or two what you did this past weekend.
I took my son to get a haircut, went to the gym and swim, hung out with my wife, my other daughter, stuff like that.
That. So you ended your sentence on that. Okay. What I was listening for was the last word of your sentence, and that last word will be the first word of my sentence. So I would say, that sounds like an awesome weekend. I did some stuff with my family too and got in some good television binging. I needed a night on my couch. So I ended the last sentence with couch, and then couch would be the first sentence or the first word of your sentence. So try that for me, Richard.
Yeah, couch. I don't know. Couch is all I can say is couch. For the first word of your sentence, that seems pretty difficult.
So you'd be like, couches, and you can even pluralize it. So like, couches are my favorite thing to lay on. When I come home from work, I just like to get on the couch, put my feet up, maybe pop some popcorn. And so what happens in that activity, which is a forced activity, obviously, is you have to wait to respond by listening to the end of the person before you sentence. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Right, but with couch, what I would say is a non sequitur. I guess that's why I didn't say it. That's what blocked me from doing it. I'm listening to you. Why would I like all of a sudden go off on a different tangent and talk about like couches that I like?
Before we continue, I've been personally funding the Finding Genius podcast for 4.5 years now, which has led to 2,700 plus interviews of clinicians, researchers, scientists, CEOs, and other amazing people who are working to advance science and improve our lives and our world. Even though this podcast gets 100,000 plus downloads a month, we need your help to reach hundreds of thousands more worldwide. Please visit findinggeniuspodcast.com and click on Support Us. We have 3 levels of membership from $10 to $49 a month, including perks such as the ability to see ahead in our interview calendar and ask questions of upcoming guests, transcripts of podcasts you're interested in, the ability to request specific topics or guests, and more. Visit findinggeniuspodcast.com and click Support Us today. Now back to the show.
Well, and so that's a good point. In a normal conversation, you wouldn't, but just in this forced activity, it's one of those things that can take you wherever, and I should have prefaced that for you, it could take you wherever you're supposed to go. So the whole idea behind it is you can't pre-plan what you're going to say. You have to wait until the person is finished to start your sentence. And so with it, this case study, I was giving you this example from this healthcare facility I worked with this past week, there was a lot of sort of guessing what other people are thinking. There was a lot of not necessarily listening and fine-tuning a process. So when you listen to the end of a sentence and you have to use that last word to start the first word of your sentence, you are unable to pre-plan. You're in the moment. You're present. And I always ask people, if you're looking at my hand, let's just say the beginning of my fingertip to the end of my elbow, and let's say that's a full sentence, the tip of my finger to the end of my elbow. I always ask people, at what point in that sentence on my arm do you think that people stop listening? And most people say, what do you think they say, Richard?
When do they stop listening? I don't know, at various times, maybe if the person's droning on, they kind of tune out in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. And so like some people say like at your wrist, and I've heard people say like at your cuticle. And it's so funny because it's true. Like when we're all human beings, we all are in our own heads and our own minds while people are communicating. But for me, like when I think about communication, the most important part of communication, in my opinion, is listening. Because what happens is you make the person on the receiving end feel good. And so that's one example of one activity that we do in a variety. We have 10 different workshops. So that one's in our effective communication workshop, but it's just real specific on that specific skill set. And so depending on whatever the challenges of our client, we'll match that objective with another workshop that we have. Go in, and every workshop has its own set of activities, its own thesis statement and overarching objective. But we always say we measure the ROO, the return on the objective versus the ROI, because soft skills are one of the hardest things to measure. So we want to make sure we get that objective right before we go in.
Well, I can understand in this context, you know, focusing on the last word, make sure they stay till the end. But what, how do they translate to regular interactions at work?
Yeah. So after you do this activity, we have a big debrief discussion. And so let's just say, like, you know, I'll ask this question hypothetically to a group of people. How many in this conversation, how many of you actually were thinking about something other than what we were talking about? I'm like, it's okay. You could be honest. And almost everybody's hands go up because it's natural. We do that. So when we talk about listening to the end, and if you were to look at my hand, the tip of my finger to the end of my elbow, and say, you know, we stop listening at the wrist, I'll ask them, what happens when you stop listening to your patients from the beginning of your finger to your wrist? Well,
you amputate the arm at the wrist.
Yeah. They're losing an arm. They're losing jobs and arms. And so, and so when you start in that context, and it's like, okay, well, what happens if you only listen from the wrist to the elbow? Well, okay, I've missed the whole first part. So now I'm probably trying to catch up the whole time. And then what I really get to is, how does it make your patient feel? And so when you talk about the person on the receiving end, the patient can be substituted for coworker, direct report, you know, intern, whatever it might be that you're talking about in an organization. And you start to really focus on how it makes the other person feel in that moment. That's when the light bulbs go off and people are like, man, I got to pay attention, you know, because I'm making Susan over in accounting feel like a piece of crap. And that's not doing anything because I need Susan's help to help me do XYZ. And so it's a conversation starter, and we go deep within the workshop, but it's up to the participants to take the workshop and put it into action at work. And that's why that e-learning course exists, because the live session is so jam-packed, but then that e-learning course reinforces it for 3 weeks after we leave.
Who does the reporting? Is it like self-reporting on what they experienced? Or do you ask people that they've had conversations with, like, hey, was it better to talk to Bob this week? You know, was he more present? Like, how do you get feedback?
Yeah, that's a great question. So what we do when we do the e-learning course is we essentially leave it up to the manager or the client, whoever booked us to come in. We give them prompts and questions that they can follow up with the team every single week that apply to what they're learning in the e-learning course. And so if we work with an organization multiple times, a lot of times we come in maybe once, twice a year at the most with a team. A lot of times they're hiring us back year over year for, let's just say, intern recruiting programs, or we want you back for our offsite next year again. It's mostly, I'll be honest, gigs, but sometimes we do have those clients that use us repetitively and bring us into their curriculum. And that's when we can really measure. That's when we can do surveys and we can see how the results are changing over time and use data and get really specific. But the other way that that happens is through those e-learning courses and managers getting direct feedback from their team. And that's something we're really working on too, is really connecting with the managers once we're gone to make sure they're implementing it, because the live session is a blast. Like, they're having so much fun. They're learning at the same time, but we really want them to take that and apply it. And that's, they have got to, and I always say this to all of our clients, you have got to take the lead on making sure this conversation sticks.
Well, what is some of the feedback you've gotten? You said, like, in session, they're loving it, but what about, you know, 1, 2, 3 weeks out? Who are you getting feedback from? What is it?
Great question. So we've been in business 10 years. To date, I think we've done 879 events. And so one of my proudest moments, and this is just a really great example, is through American Marketing Association. We came in, we did one workshop, and this is when they were changing their culture. This was about 2017. They're making a lot of culture changes, but yes and became, which is one of the biggest principles that we teach, which is one of the biggest principles of improv comedy, was a core value that they added into every single piece of material that they had in their office. You go into a conference room and yes and was posted on the door. Make sure you're using yes and to brainstorm. Make sure you're using, this is a yes and environment. They said it with love because they're American Marketing Association. The copy was great, but it was in every single situation you can imagine, they reinforced this fundamental of yes and. And so that's an example of an organization taking what we've done and amplifying it to the 100th degree. Not everybody's going to bring us into their core values, but we have had so many clients. DoorDash is another great example I can think of. I worked with them last year, their entire global recruiting team. And that was one of the first times they'd gotten together in the past couple years. The entire team bonded in a way in that session that carried over for the rest of their offsite, that has carried into their conversations on Slack, because they have these core memories that they're talking about and using. And I'll tell you, yes and is a very popular example, but there's also lots of other very specific activities that we teach that get brought into their day-to-day work. So anytime I can see anything in the workshop spill over in their day-to-day and help them actually rethink the way that they're working together and collaborating, I'm calling that a win. That client specifically has been in contact with us, and we didn't talk to her for a couple months after the session. And she said, you know, what I've witnessed from that time together was just not only the collaboration between my team and the openness and the vulnerability they felt for the rest of the offsite, but how that's trickled into our communication virtually, because they're all virtual. So the way they communicate over Slack, the way they communicate in team meetings, has just a higher amount of rapport, which leads to less problems and more communication and overall team happiness. So the other thing, everything that we do is a morale booster, and it allows people to feel good. And if they can feel good and feel like they're being seen, heard, and valued, then they want to show up. And if they want to show up, productivity rises, and then they, the organization, thrive.
So I guess there's a direct correlation between employees at a business feeling like they're not being listened to and them likely to quit. Have you seen that?
Yeah. Oh, I've seen that. Yeah. 1,000%. And I mean, let me tell you this. I was that person. And I write about that in my book. because when you don't feel like you matter, or you don't feel like your ideas are getting taken seriously, or you're accounted for, I mean, you just slide to the back. You just like that. I had a leader who did this to me. I called this leader Chad. Okay. And Chad ruined my psyche, my nervous system, my own morale internally. And I'll tell you, I stayed in that job for a year and a half until I found a leader who kind of pulled me out of that shame hole. I always say Chad was climbing the corporate ladder and didn't care who he had to step on to get to the next rung on that ladder. And my boss that I got after that, her name is Jennifer D'Angelo, she put the ladder of empathy into my hole of shame and pulled me out. And because of her, I am where I am today, because she believed in me, guided me, listened to my ideas, made me feel seen, heard, and valued, made me feel smart, and actually cared about my well-being as an employee. I stayed with Jen 5.5 years until I left to build my own business. So, and she was the catalyst and the cheerleader for me to start Improve It.
That's great. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So what's up, this new book you wrote on radical empathy? Let's maybe shift to that for a little bit. And why was there a need for the book, and what is it accomplishing for you?
Yeah. So I will tell you this. I think for me personally, I went through this massive healing journey in my own life. I had to uncover a lot of things that I had disassociated from and not processed. And after I did that, I was guided quite literally to write this book and to write it now. I think a lot of leaders coming out of the pandemic are experiencing massive amounts of burnout. We're all processing what we went through in real time and are trying to figure out how we can get quote unquote back to normal, which there isn't a new normal. Okay. There's just what we are now. And when I wrote this book, I wrote it in 5 months because there was so much that I learned in my own healing journey that I wanted to give to people, and I wanted to give to them now. And so, like I mentioned, the first part of the book is all about self-love. So there's ways to give yourself a more strategic and thoughtful morning routine. There's a exercise in there called the ideal day that helps guide you through what an ideal day looks like to you, so you can have that and bring that into your life. All of these are rooted in improv comedy. And I have another activity called New Choice, which is pulled directly from the improv stage, but it is an absolute easy and great tool to use in your day-to-day life to cast out limiting beliefs and allow yourself to say kinder thoughts internally, so you can actually say them out loud and create an action plan for your life. So that's all part one. And then I get into selfless leadership, because once you've given to yourself and you've built your own self up, you have more love to give to others. And that's really where that conversation about my former boss, Jen, comes in, because she was a selfless leader.
How do you give to others without turning it to Chad? Like, you know, for the Chads of the world, they'd have no problem with this because they're 100% selfish all the time. But there's also another group of people I've seen that are, I don't know, they feel bad about doing anything for themselves or guilty.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of let everyone like walk all over them, a people pleaser. So what kind of person is ideal for this system?
Okay. This is such a great conversation, because I got to tell you, I was that person. Can I give you a little acronym here that will kind of guide you through what guided me even more to write this book? So I called the time in my life that I was going through this healing journey, or that I didn't even know I needed to go through a healing journey, my 3 P's. I was pivoting every single day from this pandemic. I was creating a completely different business, because my business was completely in person, completely face to face. So I had to make us completely virtual. My second P was I was people pleasing. Okay. Like I'll just give the listeners this little tidbit. You and I had to pause because my now 4.5-year-old miracle baby just ran into my room. But at the time that I was experiencing all of this, it was right during the pandemic. I was a new mom. I'd been through years of infertility treatment, and I had just gotten this miracle baby boy. My mom had a stroke and almost died, and my business was completely failing due to the pandemic. So I was like giving to my team. I was giving to my clients. I was giving to my peers who are small business owners. I was giving to my son. I was giving to my mom. I just gave to everybody, which led to my 3rd P, which was pain. And it wasn't just like, ouch, I stubbed my toe type pain. It was chronic pain, pain that would not get out of my back and my shoulders, that made me cry myself to sleep at night, that a chiropractor couldn't crack. Like, it was chronic pain that lasted for 2 years. And it was when I finally realized that I had disassociated from myself and I was giving to everyone in my life except me, that was the catalyst for my pain. And I processed those emotions and my anger and my fear and my just awareness of what I realized in my own body and in my own mind. My pain went away, and it wasn't overnight.
That's amazing. That's great.
Yeah. So it was just a complete departure for how I have lived my life for the previous 39 years. I'm almost 41 years old. When I healed myself, I realized how many more people are like me who, if you're a parent, you're given to your kids all day long. If you're a business owner, you're giving to everyone, your clients, your team, your vendors, your partners, your everyone. And as family members, we give to our families. And sometimes we do this in such a way that we forget that we have to give to ourselves first. And I was burnt to a crisp. I had nothing to give to anyone, including myself. So it made me step back and really realize that I had to give to me. I had to pour into myself first so I could give to others. And it's cliche, like it's that fill your kettle so you can fill other people's cups. But that was the truth. And my kettle was so dry. I had nothing to give. And that showed in how I was leading my team. And it was leading all areas of my life, to be honest.
But what is the balance point? How do you know what or how much to give to yourself versus others?
That's a great question. So I have something in there called a lightsaber day. And I call it LSD. It's not a drug, okay? But it's called the lightsaber day. So that balance really comes when you feel yourself burning what I call the candle. My husband also calls this burning the candle. When I would run myself in the ground for weeks and days on time or over time, I would literally come home and faceplant. And he would be like, okay, you're burning the candle. And that would just be a continuous pattern. I would just continue go and go and go until I was burnt to a crisp. And so the balance really is preventative self-care. So not getting to that place of burnout. If you feel yourself starting to kind of go down, I say handle your big wick energy, Richard. I said wick energy and schedule a lightsaber day. And a lightsaber day is a day where you save your light before it burns out. So this is scheduling a PTO day. It's scheduling time in your calendar where, let's say the kids are at school and you have free time, you're not doing something for the kids. You are going to a thrift store and thrift shopping if that's what makes you happy. You're playing golf if that's what makes you happy. You are roaming the shelves at Home Goods if that's what brings you joy, but you're filling your cup first before you burn it out.
What if you couple these with daylight savings time? Like, as you said that, no, it came to mind is March 10th is daylight savings. I'm excited. So maybe that should be it, like twice a year at least. People on daylight savings, they do this for themselves. You know?
That's genius. I feel like we need two is a start for some people. It was a start for me. And I like that though, because like you're getting an hour or you're getting, you know, you're losing an hour of sleep or you're gaining an hour of sleep on those days. But like, let's start there. We'll start with two and see what happens. Because I got to tell you, like I have people in my own life who I recommend this to and they don't listen. And then, you know, anxiety starts to creep in or they start to feel chronic fatigue. And it's like, come on. If you could just take an LSD day, if you could just give yourself a day, you have PTO to burn. Use it. Some people
maybe that's too much for people, and maybe they could start with an afternoon, like a Friday afternoon takeoff, or they could even start with an hour if they really messed up.
I love that. I love that. Yes, and that I think is just I think that's like a great way to dip the toe, because I was a workaholic too. Like that was part of the whole problem. In this 3 P's period.
I used to feel like that. Like, if I wasn't constantly working, I'm a bad person. And my wife would be like, let's go to the movies. And I would think, no, I got to get stuff done. But what was it? It was no point after a while. It was just, you can't live like that.
You can't. And that was exactly me, Richard. I was the same way. I thought rest was like, when people are like, you need to rest, I thought they meant just like laying down. I didn't think it was productive. And I never rested ever. And my body was screaming at me to rest. And when I finally did, I now live what I call the three P's remix. I live this life filled with purpose. I know my purpose, which is here talking to you, talking to your audience about this. I know my priorities, which is my family, and that's first, and then work, and family, friends, and then work. And then I also have a deeper sense of inner peace. These are my new three P's, right? Priorities, purpose, and peace. And I never had that growing up. In 40 plus years of walking this earth, I never had that until I started actually walking my walk, not just talking my talk.
Well, it's good you have it now. Yeah, it's excellent.
Thank you.
Have you noticed that it's like an immune system, I guess, you know, people's ability to listen and to do all these skills, is it innate in them? It just needs to be brought out? Or do they need specific courses and like active listening and empathy and things like that?
Such a good question. You know, I think for a lot of people, the easiest and the hardest thing to do is to get still. That was really hard for me for a long time. And I know for a fact, after being the person who resisted stillness, that in stillness is when all of my magic happens. It's where I get the greatest ideas. It's where I am able to recharge and fully be who I'm here to be. I do believe that all of us have this capability to be still and listen to what our inner guidance system is telling us. But some people need the courses and the classes to do it and actually make it happen. I used a wonderful spiritual teacher myself to become more mindful and to get to a place where I could actually sit, rest, and be. So I think it depends on the person. But what I will say for sure is that every single human being has the capability to do it. The will to do it is the differentiator.
I was imagining what you're talking. Imagine you're in a sales call when it comes to a decision point, and you say to the prospect, you know, let's have literally a minute of silence for you to think. I'm not going to interrupt you, nothing. Just relax for a minute. I wonder what that would do. It'd be weird.
It would be awesome. I'd be like, hell yeah, whoever this person's selling me to. If I was this person on the receiving end, I'd be like, hell yeah. I haven't had a minute of sitting by myself all day. And this person knows what, is giving me an opportunity to like be reflective right here, right now. But I can also see, and this is me being like real comfortable in it, right? If I wasn't, it could be real weird and real awkward. But I do think when you have those moments of stillness, and when I've said moments of stillness, I mean alone, like having your journal, having a minute to just sit, reflect, and be at the beginning or the end of a day. What if we really had stillness at work? What if we had more stillness at work? I would love to see that and see the results.
It would be weird if there was a workplace where, you know, you came in and for the first 15 minutes, you know, it was recommended and encouraged you to just sit and relax and, you know, don't check email, none of that stuff. Just chill out.
You know, I actually worked with a fitness client years ago, Les Mills. They do like a lot of the choreography for boot camps, things like that. And they sell it to gyms. And that's what they did. They had a meditation room in their office and people like they could come in and meditate and then go to work. And then they had guided meditation and yoga. Obviously, it's fitness and mindfulness and health all kind of go together. And I know when I did the DoorDash retreat, they had a sound bath instructor come in before we came in.
Hey, a DoorDash retreat. Was that wasn't for DoorDashers. That was for the management.
Recruiters. Yeah, like their whole global recruiting team. So it is interesting. I mean, it's getting incorporated more and more and more. I think it's weird for people because like people just don't do it, right? And so some people find it super comfortable and relaxing. And I think what's hard about being still and actually listening and being receptive to whatever comes to us is that it takes us out of the rush of the day to day. But I'm here to say like the rush is over, man, because I did it for way too long and all it got me was bad back pain, chronic stress, and maybe some headaches here and there and an over obsessive amount of drinking Kim Crawford Sauvignon Blanc at the end of the day. If you don't want to live like that, there's other ways.
Right. Well, I mean, it just brings to mind that, not trying to tell you what to do, but I just imagine you working with a company and everyone's excited for a while. And then after a few weeks, kind of like goes back to the way it was. So I would think a continuous or an updated, you know, in your packages quarterly, at least there should be some kind of refresher or reminder, or, you know, maybe you tell them, all right, deliberately schedule in some quiet time in your day. And the manager has to approve and be good with it so you don't bother them. But maybe that would create more of a lasting impact, or maybe you're creating a lasting impact already. I don't know.
I love that. No, it's a great idea. I think we try to do touch points with the managers, but maybe there's a way to do touch points with the team. I like that.
Yeah, the managers turn into, right, if there's a training for them where they can do this with their, you know, their support staff, yeah, it would be radically different. You know, if each manager has, let's say, just 5 to 7 people that they manage, that would be a lot of influence.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. Richard, okay. You heard it here first. Talk to me in a year. It's worth that.
Right on. Well, it's really cool what you're doing. So what is the release date for the book? And I don't know if it's been out long enough for you to get feedback, but what is it?
Yeah. So it launched February 20th, and we actually hit #1 in business health and stress on Amazon that day. And, wow. Yeah, and we sold out on Amazon like that whole week. It was after we launched, it was sold out, and now it's back. It's been, you know, I'm hearing from my community right now, really. It's not from somebody I don't know necessarily. So I'm getting a lot of feedback from my community specifically. And part of, like, every single day, part of my joy right now is hearing how different parts of it touch people in their own way. It's what they need to hear in that moment. And one of my really good friends who has a lot of stress and I wish would take better care of themselves sent me a message and said, this book was made for me. And I was like, oh, thank you. And it was. I thought of you the whole time while writing it.
That's cool. That's good.
So, yeah, I've been getting a lot of good feedback, again, only from my community. I know once it gets out, you know, past my community and other reviews start coming in, there might be different things, and you can't please everyone. I learned that in my 3 P's. So the feedback has been great. And I just, my hope was that this book is a book that you highlight, you underline, you know, dog ear, you post-it note it, and you write all in it and give to yourself and can look back at it and see it as somewhat of a journal and a reminder.
I got one more idea for you, by the way. Yeah.
Give it to me.
I would have a companion journal for a whole year that comes with the book, you know, and it gives you, I don't know what you call it, like, you know, attaboys or whatever throughout the year for each month and a plan for each month and, you know, like a skill to cultivate.
Oh, I like that, Richard. I have a, we built a...
Because then it's more likely to turn into a habit and a long-term thing. And
so yes.
I read it, I feel good, and now I'm back to the hell from whence I came.
That's a good idea. Okay, well, you want to talk monthly and you can give me all these ideas because these are really fresh and I'm here for it. I do have, I have a guidebook, it's called the Resource Guidebook, that is built in conjunction with the book. So they can, it's not necessarily a journal, but it's more like a fillable PDF that they can download and do the activities and have to keep and save on their computer or print out. But I
well,
have
you know what I say too is throughout the year, I know everyone's stress is not the same, but January stress is going to be similar for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And July stress is going to be similar in September because, you know, we all move to a rhythm and there's not endless rhythms, but there's probably a few in common. So that's why it just popped into my head. Like I said, a book that, you know, every month it gives you a different take and it acknowledges what probably is going on during that month in readers' lives.
Okay. Book number two. Okay. Richard, yes, this is genius. Finding Genius. It's like I'm on a show called Finding Genius. Oh, I love it.
Okay, guys, I call Finding Idiots and no one would have come on, you know?
You know what's funny? I had my podcast originally was called The Failed It Podcast because we were like talking to successful people about their failures. It's really hard to get people to promote a show called Failed It. So learn
that. Yeah, I did the same thing. And it is very hard to get people because I realize you feel embarrassed or stupid or, you know, it's rare that someone could do it and be okay with themselves. So I tried the same thing, but yeah, it didn't work.
Yeah, me too. So we switched it to what we know works and here we are, but that's hilarious. I love the name of the show. You are really smart. You've got great ideas.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's just stuff that comes to mind when I talk to people. So any way I can help, go with it, run with it.
You know, yeah.
Well, cool. So yeah, I guess we're probably at the end. So let's recap all the resources for listeners so they could find out more about you and get your books. Like, what are the different entry doors they can take to start, you know, seeing what you have?
Yeah. Well, Everything is on my website. It's erindeal.com. You can find our podcast there, Improve It Podcast. That's the name of our show. You can find the book there, I See You, A Leader's Guide to Energizing Your Team Through Radical Empathy. And it'll take you to all the retailers where you can get it. We're getting it in quite a few indie stores, so I'm really excited about that too. But you can find it on all your major retailers. And then all the information, socials, everything are on itserindeal.com. So thank you, Richard, for having me today.
No problem. Just for listeners, Erin is E-R-I-N. Deal is D-I-E-H-L. And it's called Improve It with an exclamation. So I just want to make sure in case I speak too fast or whatever, people can understand it still.
Thank you so much. Yeah, and everything you need will be right there.
Excellent.
If you like this podcast, please click the link in the description to subscribe and review us on iTunes.
You've been listening to the Finding Genius Podcast with Richard Jacobs. If you like what you hear, be sure to review and subscribe to the Finding Genius Podcast on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And want to be smarter than everybody else? Become a premium member at FindingGeniusPodcast.com. This podcast is for information only. No advice of any kind is being given. Any action you take or don't take as a result of listening is your sole responsibility. Consult professionals when advice is needed.